I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A film screening at the Vancouver International Film Festival this morning and Wednesday night is What Walla Wants. Its director Christy Garland joins me now to talk about her film that premiered at the 2018 Berlin Film Festival and won a special jury prize at Hot Docs 2018. The film is about a girl named Walla, who has grown up in the West Bank while her mother was in prison. Walla dreams of being an officer in the Palestinian Security Forces despite not being encouraged by her family. Her rebellious streak does get the better of her as she navigates her relationship with her released mother, members of her family, as well as the people at the PSF training facility. It's a compelling film that I'll get Ms. Garland to tell us about. Christy Garland is an award-winning filmmaker who has made documentary features and fiction shorts. Her first feature-length documentary, The Bastard Sings the Sweetest Song, was released in 2016. She joined me from Toronto last week. The Twitter handle is at Christy Garland. Visit VIFF.org for tickets and information. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Christy Garland. Ms. Garland, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
As I was telling you just before we started, how much I enjoyed the film. How did you get access to these various parts of her life that are depicted in the film? Because, I mean, there's some, especially the training that she goes through in terms of with the Palestinian Authority. I don't know if I've ever seen that before, you know, and then going into, say, the dorms and the sort.
Yeah, actually, it was the first time the Palestinian Security Forces has ever allowed a camera anywhere near it, so I was really quite lucky to get access to that. We just wrote them. I mean, this film was shot over the course of 6 years. I was in the West Bank 10 times over that stretch of time. And when it looked like Walla wanted to apply to the PSF and hopefully make it into Police Academy, we started trying to contact the upper echelons of the Palestinian Security Forces and the Media and Communications Department. And we let them know that we were following this really extraordinarily strong young woman. And they wrote back, you know, sort of giving me blanket permission. They said, yes, of course. And, you know, we gave them a sense of the kind of filming I do. Mm-hmm. And they were very open to it. So, I mean, when I showed up on the day with Walla on her very first day of boot camp, they were really surprised to see me there. Like, the people who gave the permission were in a completely different city. So the trainers and the, you know, the officers at the police academy in Jericho were completely surprised. But they gave me all the freedom that I wanted to shoot everything I needed to do there, and that was over the course of 4 shoots during 2 months. So I was really, really lucky to have the access that I did, and I think it shows in the film that I was really, really trusted to, you know, document Walla, the whole universe of the police academy, and I think it shows people for the first time a little bit about what the Palestinian Security Forces is all about.
I don't want to give away parts of the film, and so if I do veer off here, you'll bring me back. But there are moments while she's there for training that are unexpected, if you will. How much of that did you expect in terms of because there are moments of drama that you capture in the film that I don't think any filmmaker could have predicted.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, really, in hindsight, when you think about Walla and what a maverick character is, she's quite a rebellious individual. So I guess it really was something that shouldn't have been such a big surprise. But because she wanted to be in the police force so much, I didn't expect that the rules and the discipline would be so new to her and that she'd be rebellious. I mean, I have to say I really did embrace that. That drama as it unfolded when I was there, because I thought this is really interesting and sort of becoming a genre film. This is sort of like those films that you've seen, these army films, mm-hmm. where a charming protagonist goes into the army and sort of, you know, rebels against all the rules and the discipline and everything. But like many rebels, Walla actually flourished, you know, with that kind of structure and discipline, and it was such an enormous contrast for where she'd come from in Balata camp, where, you know, there was a lot of love, and she was raised by her aunt and her siblings, but there wasn't a lot of discipline and structure. And so for her to get there and be having to be up at 4:30 in the morning doing drills and everything, of course she hated it, and it's just in her nature to try and game the system somehow, and I think that's sort of what that whole part of the story is about, is her coming of age and learning how to be a part of something and play by the rules. But I think that was part of the fun, actually, documenting her story, because despite the fact that she had so much potential and the officers could see that, you know, she was one of the best students they had, but they often said, you know, she is definitely, you know, she's like a piece of carbon that we know we kind of have to pressure into a diamond, but she's got a lot of potential, but she could also be kicked out quite easily if she keeps up the shenanigans.
When did you first meet her? When did you first encounter her? And because she is, when we meet her in the film, she's quite young, but there's a clip of her on the news from earlier, and I guess, was that the first time that you sort of caught a glimpse of her?
Actually, you know, we sort of lucked out, because there was two different clips that were taken of Walla and her family while her mother was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was when she was 13. I hadn't met her then. I actually met Walla in 2012, in July of 2012. I was in the West Bank looking for a film, actually. I was accompanying some Danish game designers, video game designers, who hold workshops in conflict regions, and their focus is to teach young women how to design their own video games. So I had offered to go along with them and shoot footage of their workshops, and in exchange, maybe I'd find a film. I didn't find a film about that, but I did meet Walla, and that's sort of how it started in 2012. At that time, she was just about to turn 16. So when we were putting the story together in the edit room, you know, the footage that I had shot spanned the years from 16 until she was 22. So there is quite a bit of growing up that happens on screen. But then we were shocked, actually, to find out that there had been a journalist that had gone into Balata camp when Walla was 13 to interview the kids of prisoners on Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So it took us a while, but we tracked down that footage. It actually hadn't been broadcast anywhere. A journalist shot it, and then it had been shelved. So it took a bit of effort, but we dug it up, and there was Walla at the age of 13. So that was a little bit of a gift. And then the other thing was another news interview that Walla had done when her mother was released from prison, which also happens near the beginning of the film. So we were quite lucky that of all the prisoners and of all the, you know, prisoners' children, Walla was sort of selected twice in these past years. And so that really did help us shape an arc dating back nearly 10 years in her life.
Well, what strikes us when we first see Walla is she's obviously bright and awfully articulate. The other thing when we see her, as you depict her in the film, she's ambitious, and as you alluded to a moment ago, that determination doesn't always serve her well, especially when she's in that camp training. I mean, to borrow from the film, I mean, what does she really want in life?
I think ultimately, and one of the things that really intrigued me about Walla is that she wants what we all want and what lots of teenagers want. She wants some measure of control over her own life and her destiny and what she's going to do with her life. She is ambitious, but I think wanting to have a job and have, you know, have a uniform and a reason to be proud of yourself and a way to stretch your capabilities, a paycheck, all of the things that are completely normal desires for us in North America or Europe, for instance, for Walla is a very complicated goal. Living where she does. So, I think the film is called What Walla Wants, because what she does really want is she wants a job. She wants a productive, constructive, positive future for herself. But when she comes from Balata camp, where, you know, living within the, you know, one of the most intense centers, you know, in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, a lot of, like, both intifadas were sort of centered in Balata camp where she comes from. Every other neighbor or relative has been to prison for some stretch of time.
Mm.
This is normal. Like, Walla grows up, like a lot of the kids in Balata camp grow up listening to stories of prison stories, the way we listen to stories of our older brothers or sisters or cousins going to Europe for a year or going to camp or going to university. They're listening to people's stories from what it's like to be in prison. It's extremely common there.
Yeah.
So I found it remarkable that this kid actually wanted to be on the police force, and she wanted to have a job, and she wanted to do something. And really, I did feel like she was at a fork in the road. She could go one way or another because she does have a chip on her shoulder. She's got a ton of energy, like you say. She's quite clever, and she's driven, and this is not a kid who wants to settle down and, you know, have a family right away. Like a lot of her sisters do, they've started having a family like when they're 21 or 22. Walla didn't want that. She really, really wanted a job. So I found that absolutely fascinating. But knowing that, you know, her background was going to get in her way. This is a kid who's learned how to protect herself.
Yeah.
And she's sort of built up a lot of defenses, which is something I completely admire. She takes care of herself, and she's had to. She lives in a very complicated place. And sometimes the way you sort of arm yourself gets in the way of you participating in a rule-based, discipline-based operation like training for boot camp or something. So it's sort of that I found very, you know, in order to get what she truly wants, she had to address those aspects of herself that, you know, those very defensive parts of herself that, you know, she's used to protect herself, but now she needs to sort of let her guard down in order to become the person that she wants to be.
There's some beautiful shots in your film, Christy, about of her just looking out into the scenes of daily life, looking out at crowds marching by, looking out into the sunset, if you will, or you know, and you can tell that she's very thoughtful. And so when you get to know her over the years that you know her, this is, I guess, 6 years, what's the sense that you get about what she's thinking about?
That's a really great question, actually. She is, I mean, one of the reasons Walla was so fascinating to follow for all those years is because it's interesting to try and contemplate what makes her tick. She's a complicated young woman. She's witnessed a lot in her time, like being in Balata camp where she lives. She's seen a lot of violence, having, you know, gun battles, as you can tell by the film. Like, she's seen a lot of fighting and gun fights within Balata camp. And just, I think what Walla craves is connection and recognition. And she wants to sort of feel powerful and in control of her life the same way we all do. So I do feel like there is this person inside Walla who is protected by the outer Walla, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
She can certainly be very frustrating as a young person if she's, you know, just in terms of the way she fights some things,
yeah,
especially things that are actually going to be good for her or that she needs.
When her mother is telling her something, and she does the thing that all young people do, you know, just automatically dismissive of whatever she says and, you know, rolls her eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she does have some classic some of it is just teenage
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a rebel in the way that all teenagers are, where they test the limits of what's acceptable, and they also, it's also a way of them exploring who they are. She's sort of exploring aspects of herself and sort of trying to get the answer to questions about what she's capable of. I mean, there's not a ton of encouragement for her, so she really is her own best advocate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a lot of what goes on with her is that she has the confidence and the bravado to sort of go after these things, but really just a belief in herself, a true belief in herself, is something that she struggles with. And I think that is the thing that's such a pleasure to watch as it unfolds in the film. That as she, you know, as we all do when we were growing up, if you try one thing tentatively and sort of dip your toe into something and all of a sudden you find out that you're good at it, that can be something that builds on itself. And that's how we become who we are. And I think that's the process that she's going through. And I think what she's thinking through the whole thing is it's just this mixture of drive, self-doubt, just ever fluctuating back and forth, where she believes in herself, she doesn't believe in herself, she's excited, she's rewarded, she's discouraged, all of those kinds of things that sort of happen in any coming-of-age film. But with Walla, it always has a twist, of course, because of her family background and where she lives.
I'm sure documentarians get this question a lot, Christine, and that is the person that we see on screen, is that the same person that's how they are when they're not being filmed? And in the case of Walla, I would assume that that's the same person.
Well, it is. It is. But make no mistake, there's no such thing as purely fly-on-the-wall, observational, impartial, objective documentary filmmaking. There never was. I mean, the minute you have a camera in a room with people, behavior and the way people represent themselves is filtered through that knowledge that there's a camera there recording it. I mean, it has been said, you know, I think Albert Maisel said that there's no, I mean, even if they wanted to portray an image of themselves, their best image of themselves, not everybody's a professional actor, and you can't really hold that up. So eventually, yes, people do forget about the camera, and it becomes a piece of furniture, especially when you shoot like I do. I was there morning, noon, and night, and shooting pretty continuously, so they get very bored with you, and so they do relax, and there is a lot that unfolds that is very, very natural. But I would never say that it's 100% what Walla would be if the camera weren't rolling, because that's completely, I think that's quite impossible. However, she was very, very comfortable with the camera, and so therefore was, you know, comfortable, she was relaxed, and she just sort of, I mean, the one thing that helps me at the PSF is that the rigors of training and what they had to do, she had to pay attention, and she had to be constantly on the move, so there wasn't that much time for her to be bothered with me. And after a while, I just sort of stayed out of the way, and so that really does help how natural things are and how things seem to unfold in a very natural way in front of the camera. But I mean, in terms of how, you know, who people are when the camera is on, I know definitely that, you know, Walla, there's no doubt that she doesn't mind having the camera on her, and she's very confident acting, you can see it. It records moments of pain and humiliation as much as it records her sort of going after things and, you know, doing things where she looks great. But, you know, so she was obviously very comfortable when at her weakest moment, you know, after she sort of almost loses her friendship with a lot of the other girls in the dorm because of the problems that she's having there. Yeah. And that's an extremely vulnerable moment for her and something that she would hide from everyone. But for some reason, she was okay with me being there with the camera. I think, you know, there's something that happens with documentary subjects. When you choose to make a documentary about someone and ask them if you can do that, you're in a way saying, there's something about you and your life that I think is important and that I think other people will relate to. And there's something about your story that might make other people feel less alone. And I think that's part of why Latifah and her family allowed this film to be made, because they kind of rise to that occasion and they realize that, I mean, it's nice to be told that there's something about your life that's meaningful enough to make a film about. So that helps, I think, relax her a little bit, and it also helps her kind of understand whatever I happen to be filming at the time, why that may be important to share and to allow people to get close. So I think that's important to note. And the other thing to say is I believe that when people allow me to make a film about them, they are participating as storytellers along with me. Like, they're telling their story along with me. So I certainly don't take credit for how natural things seem to be, or whenever I get remarks with all my films, actually, about how incredibly natural the story seems to unfold and people don't seem to be aware of a camera, I have to give all the credit to the people who have the courage and generosity to let me shoot them that closely and for very long periods of time. Walla was definitely an amazing example of that.
Do you speak the language? Did you speak the lingo that they speak?
Arabic?
Yeah.
No, so I don't speak Arabic.
What I find fascinating, though, pardon me for interrupting, is because you capture so many marvelous moments, like even when she's telling stories to people about her life or what happened at training camp, I mean, how do you? I mean, did you just shoot everything and then look at it later? I mean, how do you know that there's a great moment of, say, introspection, as there often is at times?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of. Obviously, there's a lot of shooting, and there's a lot of reading of body language, and there's certainly a lot of footage of stuff that, you know, scenes where, for instance, if you're just allowed in somebody's living room and they're all having a conversation without knowing what they're talking about, I would just shoot that like it could be the most important scene. And I shoot the dramatically, like I cover scenes the way they would be covered for TV or a movie or whatever. I make sure that we see wide shots, we understand who's in the room, we see, you know, single shots, and then knowing that I've got all of that coverage, then we find out after translations what's being said and what actually happens in that scene. That said, I did have an amazing fixer, translator, production coordinator by the name of Ikram Zubaydi. She actually works at the Palestinian Center for Peace and Democracy in Ramallah, and I had met her when I first went down there. She was working with those women who were the video game designers, and I thought she was fantastic. I got along really well with her, and Walla and her family really trusted her. So because they trusted her, they trusted me. So very often she would let me know, like, afterwards what they had said. And so I'd had an idea. And certainly once the filming began in the first couple of years, the story started to take shape. And it became clear, okay, this is a story about a young woman who wants, you know, despite where she comes from, despite the sort of legacy, her, like, having so many relatives in jail and her mother in jail, here's somebody who wants to be a cop. So I kind of knew that's what the story was. So you anticipate what the next story points might be. Okay, she's going to have to apply. Is there going to be anything getting in the way of that? What's her mother going to think of that? What's her brother going to think of that? So then you wait around and find out. Like, I would ask questions, and Ikram would say, when are you going to apply? Have you told your mother? And Walla would say, well, I was going to try and talk to my mother about it tomorrow when she's back in town or whatever. And so I would just make sure I was there, and I would shoot everything they talked about all day. And then suddenly it would come up. Eventually it would come up. Because I knew that there was some kind of deadline for Walla to be asking her mother. Do you know what I mean? So these are how I kind of directed, in a way. I shaped the film anticipating things that I knew were going to happen based on Walla's intentions. And I just made sure I was there to capture it when it did. And no, I wouldn't know exactly what they said until it was translated. But Ikram would very often let me know at the end of the shooting day basically what happened.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how I did it.
Yeah, there's a moment in the film where, and I'm trying not to give it away, but there's a phone call that they receive, a dramatic phone call. We don't see that, but we hear it. Did you record it, or how did that come about?
No, that was the girls have this thing in their phone, their phones that automatically record phone
I see.
Calls.
Yeah.
And I was just really, really lucky that I got to, like, I asked them if they had, if they could do that or if they had anything like that, and it just so happened they had one stored on their phone, and it's a pretty important phone call that, you know, that's part of a sort of roller coaster story.
Yeah.
And what we don't expect happens in the third act. So, yeah, I was very lucky. I was, look, as you can see with the archival stuff and everything, I was quite lucky in some cases that there were records like this that we could pull together to shape the narrative.
And then the last shot of the film, the last scene, I should say, it's such a great scene because we're seeing her doing her job essentially, and working through what an officer has to work through when interviewing someone, and. It ends on such a hopeful note, and so considering that in mind, what's Walla up to today?
Well, she's still doing that job, and she still likes it quite a bit. Well, I guess it's a bit of a spoiler alert here, because there is some question about whether or not she makes it through to be a police or not. But the way that last scene was shot is I knew that we had to answer this film question about whether or not she would ever achieve her goal, and if she is a cop, what kind of cop will she be? And, like, where does this kid land in terms of all the things that have been, all the questions that have been asked about her character and some of the things that she's been dealing with, the obstacles she's been facing on various levels? And that scene actually just perfectly answers many of those questions for me, at least. I mean, I knew that we needed to see her on the job.
Uh-huh.
And at first, I mean, I shot for 3 days in the police station. And she was doing this job where people come in, whether they're criminals who are being arrested or have been apprehended for some reason, and they put them through this series of questions, or it's people officially registering complaints about, you know, who knows what, burglaries or what have you. And it was her job to ask them the questions and enter all the information. And I thought, well, okay, what we really need we need just some kind of intake conversation with another person that shows us who she is now and how that person is a more mature, grown-up Lala that's sort of been through everything we've seen her go through, and where does that bring her as a person. And I thought the best scene, I was, of course, anticipating, like, an ideal scene, and I thought it would be great if there was, like, a young female criminal or delinquent or somebody who's being brought in that Lala would have to speak to. And I thought that would be perfect in a way, because Lala herself was a little bit of a delinquent,
right,
you know, at the beginning of the film. And that didn't really happen. It was mostly people who were making complaints about other sort of problems and fights and altercations or whatever. But this one that we kept really just seemed for me to answer all kinds of questions, because it also happens to contain a conflict in the woman's complaint about her husband and her husband's brother and this fight that they're having, that I feel in a way really seemed like, wow, it's kind of, in a way, it's a little bit of a microcosm of the whole conflict.
Yeah,
what Lala has to say about conflict,
yeah,
and the nature of, like, how the talks have shut down and
right,
what she has. I found that just to be quite, you know, it's maybe a little bit too on the nose, but I couldn't resist using it. But also just her advice about reconciliation and everything, I thought were very mature thoughts that she was having.
And she asks the woman who's got a kid on her lap throughout the interview, where do you live? Where does he live? And then she says, well, we live in the same building, or the same, and then she says the same floor, and then, yeah, the same floor. And she says, well, you've got to do something about that. I mean, you're going home to each other. I mean, it's incredibly wise at that point, you know?
Yeah, it's quite wise, and it's what I also like about it.
Sensible, you know?
She uses, when she's at the PSF, there's this scene, like, amazing scene, when, you know, the one of the officers who had to deal with her most often, that's Alam, the female trainer. And when she's giving Lala a talking to, because Lala was constantly fighting with the other doormates, the other dorm girls, mm-hmm, girls in her dorm, the other students. And she said, look, if you get sick right now, or if anything happens to you, who's going to take care of you? Who's going to be your support? It's going to be these girls around you. And Lala says, no, I can take care of myself. I don't need anybody to take care of me. And I thought it's lovely that at the very, very end of the film, this is the advice that she remembers, obviously, even though she rejected it at the time and pretended that she could take care of herself. At the end of the film, she's obviously absorbed it on some level, because this is the advice that she gives to this woman, that, you know, if something happens to your husband, it's going to be his brother and right next door who's going to be able to help him. And so I thought that was quite lovely, that she sort of did on some level understand why that was a wise piece of advice, and now she's giving it to somebody else.
And then the last moment where she asks the kid what her name is and flashes that infectious smile that we've seen throughout the film, I mean, it's just note perfect, Christy.
Yeah, she's so proud of her when she did that. I mean, I like that, because it just, asking a kid what her name is, it's just, you exist, and you're a young woman, you're a person, and part of the reason I made this film is because it's the most sensitive place on Earth to bring a camera, and there's a lot of different information about Palestinians out there. I didn't know anything myself. I'd never been to Israel, and I'd never been to Palestine, and I knew very, very little about that conflict, but I also knew very, very, very little about Palestinians. All you kind of hear about is the violence, mm-hmm, unfortunately. And so, and you see, you know, whatever you hear on the news. So for me, ending the film with that line was a little bit of just to sort of remind the audience that this is one Palestinian, one young female Palestinian story, and this is why she's a lot like us and why you can, you know, why you can identify with her, and hopefully it prompts people to look further. I mean, it's a very, like I said, a very complicated place to tell a story, and there's many questions raised in the film that you can't find answers to in the film, of course. But that's sort of my hope, is that just in bringing people close to one person and finding out her name and finding out what she wants and sort of being inspired by her story, it'll hopefully lead people to learn more about the place.
Well, what has Walla made of the film?
She loves it. I mean, she really does love it. She's very... I would be mortified if anybody made a film about me. That's what makes me such a hypocrite. Because, like, I would never let anyone get that close to me with a camera. But, you know, even the parts for her that are problematic, of course, who wants a camera there when you're completely shunned by all your friends and crying very privately, or all the ups and downs and horrible things that she endures in this film. She... is very brave about it, because I think she really has recognized that her story is a way, because it's entertaining, because people are frustrated with her and love her at the same time and they enjoy her story, that that is a way of sharing with the world what it's like to be a young Palestinian girl. Mm-hmm. And she's sort of risen to that as that whole occasion in order, and like she's really embraced that role that she's taken on. The film premiered at the Berlinale, which was really, really exciting. It was the premiere was in the Zoo Palace Theater, and I have never, I'm usually not nervous during screenings, but I was so nervous I could barely speak, because there was about 500 people in the audience. And even though I had shown her the film about a week or two earlier in the West Bank, sitting there, I mean, she's looking at it on my laptop at her home. Mm-hmm. Now, here she was in Berlin for the first time, outside of the West Bank for the first time. She'd been to Jordan a couple times, but besides that, she'd never traveled. And here she was in Berlin, you know, with big billboards, like there's a huge billboard with her face plastered all over it. And here she is in the Zoo Palace looking at this big screen version of her life. And all of these people clapping and asking her questions, and she really, I think that for her, she clicked into something. She realized that her story could do something for people's understanding of Palestinians, and she saw herself through a different lens, and I think it's been very good for her for that reason, and I think it's given her hope, and I think it's affected the kinds of choices that she makes for her own life and her belief in herself.
It's an enjoyable film, Christy, and as I was telling you, hopefully you know in the course of our conversation how much I enjoyed it. There are moments of high drama, and then there's sort of small laugh-out-loud moments. I mean, her mother is using Facebook, and she wants to use the computer because she's got messages that she wants to get to. And she says the thing that all kids say, tell their parents, you know, don't like your own post.
Yeah, I really liked that. I mean, I think obviously when you see that scene, it has such a twist. I mean, this was one of the approaches that I was really I wanted to choose the moments in their lives that were universal, so that people would identify and or at least, you know, see that they're, you know, that they're normal. These Palestinians are normal, except everything, of course, has a twist. You know, her mother's Facebook feed is not like the average.
No, definitely, yeah.
But, you know, on the surface, you've got her, you know, Walla rolling her eyes and saying, Mom, you don't like your own post. Here, drag your profile to getting frustrated with your mom who doesn't understand the technology. But yet, the difference in their Facebook posts, and I thought the Facebook post, their Facebook feed reflected the two different worlds that they live in. And theirs is a very, very complicated mother-daughter relationship. And I think... and that's part of the problem, really. I think the world that Latifa lives in is a very different one. Like, she, in a way, lives in the past. And everything about Latifa's existence, she seems to be stuck at whoever she became in prison. And I think also she has been somebody who has resisted the occupation for her entire life. She, you know, her father was killed. Her brother was killed. She has been, you know, she was involved in both intifadas. She was an activist from a politically active from a very, very young age, and has been traumatized by all of that, and it sort of sticks with her. And that's just where she is in her head. Meanwhile, Walla kind of represents the future. She cares. She's the kid who just kind of gets sick of hearing about the past, sick of hearing about the conflict. She wants to have fun on Facebook. She wants to plan, like, for a career. She has all the hopes and dreams of things that she looks at when she sees Facebook, and she sees all these Western influences on Facebook and on the Internet. She wants that for herself. So I thought that scene perfectly embodied those two different worlds.
It's a good movie, Christy. I appreciate the time you've taken to talk about it. Congratulations on it, and urge people to see it when it's playing here in Vancouver shortly.
Thank you very much, Joe. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the film.
What Walla Wants screens this morning, Monday, the 1st of October, 10:45 a.m. at the International Village, as well as Wednesday night, the 3rd of October, 9:15 p.m., also at the old Tinseltown there, viff.org for tickets and information. Christy Garland joined me on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plantum.